So today I am going to be talking on covenants, which is kind of a large multi-month sort of topic, but I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail, but I do want to address some things that I have never heard spoken in church, and I grew up in church. So there's so much in the Bible that has to do with covenants. And arguably, everything in the Bible has to do with covenants in one way or another. So you have the covenants and you have everything, all the details around that covenant. So it's a big deal. And honestly, we are so separated from covenants in our society that we really don't get it. We kind of get marriage, but most people don't treat marriage like a covenant, like it should be. So I'm not going to get into all the covenants in the Bible. I'm going to mention a few of them. But the main thing I want to talk about is the Mosaic Covenant, which most of us know as the Old Covenant. And also, I want to get into the historical background of it and where I believe God's heart for the Old Covenant was initially, and what the slave mindset of the people of Israel did to shape that covenant. So there are three basic types of covenants. You have a grand covenant, which is when you have a greater king who blesses a lesser king. A grand covenant is the best possible option that you can have in terms of covenants. The greater king, or oftentimes throughout the Bible, God, will bless the lesser king, people. And it's basically, it says that, I know you're a small nation, but I want to take care of you. I want to bless you. I have lots to give you, and I'm going to take care of you. And the next option we have is a kinship covenant, which is a little bit more of what we're familiar with. Kinship covenant is very similar to a marriage covenant. And in many cases, it is a marriage covenant. It can also be a covenant between two equal kings. Two countries can come together and form a kinship covenant, and which basically means that if somebody attacks you, we'll come get your back. If somebody attacks me, you'll come and protect me. And we'll kind of take care of each other. With a kinship covenant, there is usually a small list of rules. With a grant covenant, there's no rules. It's just, I bless you. With a kinship covenant, both parties come in with some kind of list of rules, and they abide by those rules. A vassal covenant is probably the worst kind of covenant you can have. It's what happens when two countries come to war with each other. The first country decimates the second country. And the only people that are left are the widows, the orphans, the old elderly people, the cripples, people who can't fight. So the king of the first country says, I could come in and kill you all, but I really like your tax money, so I'm not going to kill you. I'll let you live, but you got to pay me, and you've got to do this, and 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 this. And there's usually a very long list of rules to go along with it. Generally, you want to avoid a vassal covenant. So within the Bible, there are five main covenants. The first one was with Noah. And God says to Noah, never again will the earth be destroyed by flood. That's it. So if Noah goes and gets drunk and naked and runs around and does things he's not supposed to, does the covenant end? Did God flood the earth again? No. So is that a kinship covenant? No. It is a grant covenant. God says, no matter what, no matter what you do, I am not going to flood the earth again. There's no conditions on that. Then you go to Abraham. And with Abraham, God says, you are going to be the ancestor of many nations. Kings and nations are going to come from you. I will be your God. You will be my people. I will give you the land of Canaan. And he gives this whole long list of blessings for Abraham and his descendants. And there are no conditions to this. There are no conditions. So this, again, is a grand covenant. And it's a very good covenant. We're going to skip over the Mosaic covenant because that's what I'm going to spend most of my time on. The Davidic covenant is kind of like the Abrahamic covenant because, again, at this point in time, David is under the Noahic covenant, he's under the Abrahamic covenant, he's under the Mosaic covenant, and now God gives him another covenant that says, I am going to build up your house. Your son is going to be a king, and your kingdom's going to last forever, and he will be my son, and I will be his father. It's a really, really awesome, awesome covenant. And that, again, is also a grand covenant. The last one with Jesus, we're going to skip as well. That's the new covenant. So one thing I do want to note is that there is some confusion between Old Testament and Old Covenant, New Testament, New Covenant. I grew up hearing, and I haven't heard this from everybody, but some people say that the Old Testament is the Old Covenant and the New Testament is the New Covenant. But that's not actually true because Jesus was under the Old Covenant. And most of the Bible, most of the New Testament, is still a part of the Old Covenant. And it is still, most of, even after Jesus' death, there is still the Old Covenant in operation to an extent, even though the New Covenant has come into play, which I'm not going to get into that in too much more detail than that because that gets kind of messy and kind of lengthy. But for now, we're going to go back to the Mosaic Covenant. It's also known as the Old Covenant. So Moses grows up in Egypt as a king. But let me back up. Okay, so after Abraham, when God gives Abraham the Abrahamic covenant, he says to him that your people are going to be in slavery to another nation for 400 years. So the end of this 400 years is coming, and in Egypt, the people have been slaves in Egypt for 400 years. That's a very long time. It's about 10 generations worth, biblically. But Moses is pulled out of the slavery, and he is raised as a king. He kills an Egyptian when he's about approximately 40 years old, kills an Egyptian, runs away, and he lives in the wilderness for 40 years. He gets married, has kids, he raises sheep, and God shows up to him one day when he's about 80 years old, and he shows up in a burning bush, and God gives Moses instructions to go rescue the people from Israel, from Egypt, rescue Israel from Egypt. So, long story short, Moses talks to Pharaoh and gives Pharaoh the words that God told him to give him. And Pharaoh makes the load heavier on Israel. So now they're having to do double the amount of work. It's really, really awful. So Moses talks to God, and he says, what the heck? What are you doing? Are you coming to harm the people? Why would you do this? What's going on? So God tells Moses to talk to the people, talk to the Israelites. And he gives them the words that you'll find very often in a covenant. So God proposes a covenant with Israel. And it's very similar to the Abrahamic covenant. It says, I am going to deliver you from slavery. You will be my people, and I will be your God. I will give you the land of Canaan that I promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Sorry, I forgot I had that slide in there. So Moses spoke thus to the people of Israel, but they did not listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. So the people reject God's covenant. God offers them a grant covenant. There are no laws, there are no rules, there are no if this, then that. But if you do this, then this. There's no blessings and curses. It's just, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to bless you and I'm going to take care of you. And that's it. But because of the slavery that they had been in for so long, they couldn't accept it. They said, obviously this isn't right because guess what? Moses came and now everything's worse. So this struck me because so often, how often do we get promises from God when we are going through the roughest seasons of life? And it's very difficult to accept those promises sometimes because we say, God, this person just died. I just lost my house. I lost my job. This is going wrong. That's going wrong. And you're telling me that I'm going to be wealthy. You're telling me that I'm going to do this. You're telling me that this is going to happen because of me. How does that make sense? And if we're not careful, we'll reject it. So Israel's pulled out of slavery and led into the wilderness. And this is after God does amazing wonders and amazing signs, and Israel is absolutely decimated. I'm sorry, Egypt is absolutely decimated by the time that Israel is released. And Israel walks out with all of the wealth of Egypt in their hands. So 3 months later, they're already grumbling and complaining about not having enough water, not having food, not having garlic and onions, and things like that. But the Lord talks to Moses. The Lord called to him out of the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the people of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." It's an amazing, amazing picture right there. Born on eagle's wings. "Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among the peoples. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." That's a really big promise. It does come with a condition, though. If you obey my voice, if you keep my covenant. So what he's proposing here is a kinship covenant. The people wouldn't accept a grant covenant, so God says, okay, let's tone this down a little bit. We're going a little too fast. You think about it in terms of a relationship. When Evan and I started dating, as you can tell, he is very, very passionate. He's a very passionate person. And so he started proposing marriage within 2 weeks of dating. Not seriously, but it was this kind of ongoing joke. And after about 2 weeks of this, I'm going, okay, all right, wait a minute. This is a little fast. So I kind of freaked out. And he then comes along and he says, okay, all right, it's okay. We don't have to go that fast. It's all right. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Don't worry about it. So he condescended and said, okay, let's slow this down a little bit here. And thankfully, I came around and we got married. But and after a while, I was actually wondering if he would ever ask me to marry him at some point. Only a short while later, but I'm like, I freaked him out. He's never going to ask me again. But he did. So this is kind of what God did with the Israelites. He said, okay, all right, this is too much for you to handle. You as a slave can't just receive what I'm giving you. So you feel like you have to earn something, do something to earn it. So, all right, if you obey, if you do something to earn it, if you obey, then I can bless you. So he turns it into a kinship covenant instead. So, quick side jaunt here. Covenants are not just a Hebrew thing. This is actually an Egyptian Ark of the Covenant. They had Arks of the Covenant as well. Instead of having cherubs on the top, they have their god of their nation on, well, one of the gods of their nation, the god of the dead, on top of their box. So this is actually a very culturally normal, very culturally common thing to happen. So the Israelites understood this type of covenant. They understood the kinship covenant. So what happens on that level is I over here have my nation and my God, and you over there have your nation and your God. I believe in my God, but you don't. I don't believe in your God, but you do. So when we come together with covenants, I write down on stone my covenant. We both write down our covenant on two. We have two copies of the same covenant, each on their own stone, and we sign each other's covenants, and we each take a copy of the covenant. I put mine in my covenant box, the Ark of the Covenant, over here. You put yours in your box over there, and you put yours in your temple to your God. I put mine in my temple to my God. And what happens is if I break the covenant somehow, then my God is responsible to come and punish me. If you break your covenant, or you break the covenant somehow, then your God is responsible to punish you. So when God had to condescend to the kinship covenant, this put him in kind of an awkward position, because now God is the partner, but he's also God. So with this partnership, if somebody comes and attack me, an enemy nation comes and attack me, then my partner is obligated to come and help me. So God is obligated to come and help the Israelites whenever another foreign nation comes and attack them. But when I break the covenant and I don't follow the covenant the way I'm supposed to, my God is obligated to come and punish me. So if you think about it, this puts God in a really awkward position, doing things that he wouldn't necessarily want to do. And it makes it so that he's not able to, he has to punish where he'd rather bless. Does that kind of make sense? Okay. So we see this in the, they carried the ark like the Israelites carried the ark as well. So God proposes the kinship covenant, and he says to the people, prepare yourself in 2 days. On the third, consecrate yourself for 2 days. Wash your clothes, get ready. Don't go near your wife, that sort of thing. And on the third day, come and I'm going to talk to you from the mountain. So the people on the third day are awoken by trumpets. Very, 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 very loud trumpet blasts. They're awoken to lightning and thunder, smoke, a thick cloud like a kiln coming out of a mountain, fire on the mountain, earthquakes. To me, that's what it looks like. To me, what I picture is this volcanic mountain where the mountain is on fire, there's smoke billowing up out of it, lightning in it, and it's a freaky, freaky thing, especially when you're camped in tents at the foot of this mountain. So the people hear the audible voice of God giving them the Ten Commandments, and they're absolutely terrified. And before we, it's easy to say, well, how could you do that? How could you deny God? How could you go against, like, how could you not accept an offer like that? To be kings and priests, or not kings, I'm sorry, that's the new covenant. To be kingdom of priests. How can you not accept that and that relationship with God, that one-on-one, to be able to speak to God? How could you not accept that? But I believe God knew where they were at. God knew their mindset. God knew their tendency to rebel and to sin. And so Moses tells them, God is testing you to make sure that you do not disobey this covenant. He is showing you how absolutely massive and glorious and outrageous he is. And in order that you do not violate this covenant. So when he speaks, it is with a full power and full authority of who he is. And them as people couldn't handle it. We on this side of the veil can't handle the glory of God. That's why people died when they touched the Ark of the Covenant. Somebody died because they got too close to the glory. And it's just too much for our system to handle. And I believe there was a lot more going on with each of these things, with the lightning and thunder. And it says that they actually saw the thunder and the lightning, which makes me wonder, okay, what were they seeing? Was this actually a presence of something spiritual, or is it just simply lightning and thunder? But I believe that this, with the smoke and the thick cloud, there also came a darkness. And to me, it reminds me of many stories I've heard of the presence of the fear of the Lord. When the presence of the fear of the Lord has descended on meanings, you've hear this about with Smith Wigglesworth and other people where they are just speaking with such intensity and such passion and bringing the heavens down to this earth that the presence of the fear of the Lord descends on a group. Now, we'll see different manifestations of God like the gold dust falling or a glory cloud, but another type is the fear of the Lord. And from I've never experienced that, but from what I've heard of other people who have, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. But the fear of the Lord is not like most fear that we experience on this earth. The fear of the Lord is it's the presence of the Lord, and it only comes as close as you let it. So if you run away, that's it. It's not going to come chase you down. But if you let it in beyond the fear, beyond this presence, through the thick darkness, you get to the absolute heart of God. So, but you have to be willing to face all the garbage that is shown to you, that's in you, that is revealed because of this fear of the Lord. The presence of the fear of the Lord reveals all of the sin and the garbage and the all of our junk from our ancestors. It reveals all this and brings it to the surface. So if we're not willing to lay that aside and continue and push through to the heart of God, we're not going to get there. And the only one who did get there at this time in history was Moses. He was the only one who pressed on and continued and went further through the fear, through that darkness, through the fire which consumes. The fire burns off all of that junk. We don't deal with it. He does. He burns off all the junk that we have. And so when we willingly step through that fire, we come out the other side at the heart of God and in his presence, in that relationship. And I truly believe that that is what God wanted for his people. He said to Moses, don't let the people come up onto the mountain because the sacrifice hadn't been made yet. They hadn't been atoned for yet. So he said, don't let them come up or they're going to die. Don't let them come up or they're going to die. And Moses says, God, they're not coming anywhere near this mountain. They're terrified. They're all the way, way back there, and they're not coming anywhere close. But I just feel like when I'm reading through that, I go, God was expecting them to go through. God was hoping and longing for them to break through, and they didn't. They didn't. So, here, let me back up again. The people are terrified and they ask Moses, they say, God, Moses, God spoke to us and we lived. But if he keeps speaking to us, we're all going to die. So don't let him talk to us anymore. You talk to him and we'll talk to you. That's all. That's it. Okay. So they all deny their priesthood right there. That's it. No more priests. It's not a kingdom of priests. There is one person who talks to God, and the covenant becomes between, then comes between God and Moses, and that's it. Not God and the rest of the people. So the next day, Moses sacrifices, builds an altar and makes a sacrifice, throws the blood on the altar, throws the blood on the people, and there's then an atonement for them. And the covenant's read, the people accept it, and the covenant is the Ten Commandments, in case you're wondering. So then Moses, Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and the 70 elders go up, and they see God eat and drink with him. They see God sitting on his throne on the sapphire pavement, whatever you want to call it, and they eat and drink with God. But when they come down, they say, we saw God. Nobody ever sees their God. No nation on earth ever sees their God, talks to their God. And we lived, but if we see him again, we're going to die. We don't want to do that anymore. So Moses goes up on the mountain 40 days, and 40 days, 40 nights, doesn't eat, doesn't drink. And if you don't know the story, the people see Moses go up on the mountain, they see him up on that, and they say, God killed him. Let's do this ourselves. And they ask Aaron to build them a god that they can see, that they can worship the way that all other nations see and worship. And so they build this calf, and God is understandably absolutely infuriated because they've already broken the covenant. They've already been unfaithful and broken the covenant. And so God threatens to kill everybody and start over with Moses. Moses reminds God of his covenant with Abraham, and God relents. So Moses comes down off the mountain. He breaks the stone tablets. He talks to the Levites. He talks to the people and says, who is on the side of God? And only the sons of Levi come to him and say, we are on God's side. And so Moses asks them to go and kill everybody. And about 3,000 men died that day. And Moses spends the next 40 days on his face before God, day and night, on his face, not eating and drinking before God. So God relents, doesn't kill everyone. And then Moses goes up on the mountain 40 more days and nights. He comes down off the mountain with new tablets, and his face is glowing. This, I believe, is what this covenant was supposed to be. In relationship with God, our faces start to reflect the very glory of God. And this is what the people rejected. And if we're not careful, we today, under the new covenant, still go back and say that we're under the old covenant and hold on to aspects of the old covenant. Even though we say we're in the new covenant, we act like we're in the old covenant, and we rely on works and deeds and trying to prove something to God that I'm not good enough, so I've got to do all this stuff to be good enough to be worthy of this covenant. No, that's not the idea. So we then separate ourselves from God, but I believe that we are supposed to, because the veil has been removed. I'm getting ahead of myself and getting into the new covenant here, but because that veil has been removed through Jesus, we are supposed to be going in and seeing God face to face in the heavens. We are supposed to start reflecting his glory on this earth with unveiled faces. But Moses had to veil his face because the people were terrified. And, I'm going to not get it too far ahead of myself. So Moses is about to die. And God says to him, you're not allowed to go into the promised land. And because the kinship covenant was between God and Moses, he couldn't, the covenant would have ended with Moses' death. But God, because of his love for Israel, did not want that to happen. And so he, in essence, renews the covenant with Moses before he dies, but it becomes a vassal covenant. And that's the last one I talked about before. The vassal covenant is you have Lord and you have serfs. The Lord makes the rules and the serfs obey him. Because this was the best way that God could deal with an unfaithful people who he knew were going to be unfaithful. And this was the only way he could still be with them without killing them all. And this gave him the opportunity that if they were faithful, he could bless the socks off them. Now, if they weren't faithful, they had curse after curse after curse after curse after curse of things that were going to happen to them. So at this point in time, Moses delivers basically the entire book of Deuteronomy with all the laws and rules and regulations that the people had to follow. And this came with heavy, heavy blessing and heavy, heavy, heavy curses, whether or not they obeyed or not. And it was very much dependent on the people and if the people's works. Did they do right or did they do wrong? And again, I think it captures some of the heart of God, but it's not. God had so much more. And wrapped up in this whole vassal covenant is the promise of that so much more, which was Jesus, which was what the new covenant brought because of Jesus. So God says, okay, yes, this is good. This vassal covenant, you know, you don't have to go there or here to find out what to do. It's been given to you. It's been put in your hearts. The glory of God is in this. And if you follow, you'll be blessed. And you can be blessed mightily. But if you don't, then you're not going to. So he basically spells out the entire rest of the old covenant at the end of Deuteronomy, which is a really interesting read. Last couple chapters. And then Moses dies. The chain of authority goes to Joshua, and Joshua leads the people into the new nation. So this is in 2 Corinthians 3. Honestly, your homework for today, the rest of this week, is to read 2 Corinthians 3, because this whole book, this whole chapter is talking exactly what the heart of what I wanted to get at was in this. I was looking for something else and I found that and I'm going, oh, this is it. This is it. And I'm realizing as I'm studying all this old covenant stuff, when you get into this old covenant stuff, it makes everything else in the new covenant make sense. It makes what all of that Paul talked about makes so much more sense. So I cut this down a little bit, so I'm just taking small sections of 2 Corinthians 3, but it says, now if the ministry of death is carved in letters on stone, came with such glory that the Israelites could not gaze at Moses' face because of its glory, which was being brought to an end, will not the ministry of the Spirit have even more glory? And verse 15, yes, to this day, whenever Moses is read, a veil lies over their hearts. But when one turns to the Lord, the veil is removed. Now the Lord is a spirit, and where the spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image, from one degree of glory to another, for this comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. So we, believing in Christ, have an unveiled face. We have an unveiled heart. We took the veil off of God's face, and we can now have relationship and communion with him. We can talk to him face to face. We don't have to go to the priest. You don't have to just listen to the pastor talk and get all your information there. You can go to God directly for revelation. You could go to him directly for understanding. We don't have to have this priestly thing where the priest is behind bars up in the front and everyone else is back here and you can't read, you can't write, you can't do any of it, and the priest has got everything and you got nothing. That's not it. The idea is we all have access to the Lord. We all have access to the Father. And that is the good news. We're no longer, the good news of the gospel, we are no longer under the old covenant. We are under the new covenant. The old covenant ended because of the unfaithfulness of Israel, because she was God divorced her. It says in Jeremiah, God divorced her. And it took quite a few hundred years for that to officially take place. But when it did, that ended. And the good news is that it ended so that we can now be in the new covenant. And the new covenant is the best case scenario. It's a grant covenant. God made a covenant with Jesus. Jesus' blood was the blood of the covenant. Whenever you have a covenant, whenever a covenant is established, there has to be blood to establish that covenant. And Jesus' blood was the blood that established that covenant. And God made his covenant with Jesus so that through Jesus, we have access to every spiritual thing, every spiritual gift under the heavens. We have access to Jesus' inheritance. We have access to the Father himself. We have access to so much, and we have no idea. For you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, Abba, Father. I love that we sing that song, John, because it's so true. We don't have to be in this mindset of slavery. We don't have to go back to a spirit of orphanism. So often, I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but I find myself falling into this orphan mentality of, I have nothing, I'm struggling, I've got this, and we focus on what we don't have instead of what God has given us. But God has given us every spiritual blessing, every good thing under the heavens. And we need to start focusing in on that, and we need to start taking hold of it by faith. Because grant covenants are by faith. We take hold of it by faith. It was counted to Abraham as righteousness because he believed. By faith, he took hold of it. That's how we attain anything in the kingdom. It's by faith. It's already been given to us. We have to grab hold of it by faith and believe that we actually have it. A prince who is adopted into a person who's adopted as a prince, if he believes that he is if he doesn't believe that he's actually been adopted, is he going to live like a prince? Is he going to learn how to be a king? He's going to live the rest of his life believing that he's still just a servant or a slave or whatever he was beforehand. But no, we have been adopted as sons of the Most High God. We are kings and priests under the Most High King and Most High Priest. We need to start believing it, because if we don't, we are in trouble. Okay. I'm going to end there because it's about time. God, we love you. We praise you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Help us to start understanding this. Get it from our heads into our hearts. Get it from there into our souls and our spirits, and transform us, God. Thank you that you already have transformed us. Thank you that we already are new creations. Help us to actually believe it and walk in it and start lighting up this world with the glory, your glory that reflects in our faces. We love you and we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Have a fun, wonderful week.